Communism in Germany, Part 9, The Armed Rising, Chapter 3. At the end of January 1933, the question of procuring arms for the coming rising was already being discussed at meetings of the officials of the RFB. On the 31st of January, the leading RFB member, Schubert, declared at a secret meeting of leading officials at the party headquarters of the KPD in Hamburg that a general strike was inevitable. He said that the preliminary stage of the armed rising had come and might, at any moment, lead to the armed rising itself. The terrorist organisations of the seaboard provinces were to take action as rapidly as possible, and the unemployed might, for instance, begin to procure fuel by force. It would do no harm if direct collusions and collisions with the police took place in this connection. The data relating to the launching of and reporting on our 1933 offensive, published by the RGO, is entitled Make All Preparations to Be Ready, and continues with Events are occurring at increased speed. There is not much time left. All fighting proletarians must join us. The communists are ready to take advantage of all occasions to organize the masses and thus make possible the victory of the proletariat. The revolutionary crisis may really occur at any moment. The organ of the RFB, in its 36th illegal number of the 9th year of issue, incidentally with an alleged circulation of 500,000, is even more plainer. Quote, mobilization order. All young workers fit for military service are ordered to report themselves for service in the formations of the Red Youth Front. General examination is from today until the 15th of March. Enlist at once. We are going to attack with Luxembourg, Liebknecht, and Lenin. To all former comrades of the Red Army of the Ruhr District, to all members of the proletarian hundreds, hold meetings everywhere, organize yourselves, and join the Union of the Red Front Fighters League. Close quote. On the 25th of February 1933, the following special edition of the Rot Front was distributed. Quote, organize a continuous alarm service. Organize day and night patrols and guards. Watch the SA beer saloons. Remain together in groups. Sleep in groups. Defend yourselves in groups. And die for freedom if necessary. Organize yourselves in the tried formations of the RFB rally round them. Close quote. The language becomes ever plainer. They consider it no longer necessary to disguise their real intentions. Tomorrow they will fight on the barricades. Der Rote Matrose writes, quote, to arms, the victory will be ours. Reload your rifles, pull the fuses of your hand grenades, and off to the barricades. Hang the fascist murderers and incendiaries. Do not shout, Germany, awake, but workers to the barricades, forward to victory. Close quote. The final preparations were feverishly made. In the Ruhr district, a system of successive stages of alarm was arranged. Quote, different stages of alarm are indicated by a number, 50, 100, 150 or 200. When 50 is signalled, every member of the RFB must remain at home. The courier service has to stand ready in order to mobilise the whole organisation and to alarm the party as events take place. When 100 is signalled, patrols of single groups must be on the watch. When 150 is signalled, the whole organisation must get ready for action, and each group of five must be concentrated in a dwelling and wait for further orders. Apart from that, the instructions for the numbers 50 and 100 apply. When 200 is signalled. Armed patrols will also be sent out in accordance with the party orders or those of the RFB leaders. At each of the various stages of alarm, the groups of five have to get in touch with each other and at the same time to supply the local party headquarters with information about the situation. Further, the closest contact is to be kept with the sub-district headquarters by means of additional courier stations to be kept open day and night. Close quote. On the 25th of February, 1933, the couriers of the union leaders took the orders of the day to all district staffs. We, the central headquarters, invite all leaders and comrades to do their utmost to get all that is possible out of the organisation. We must show that we can redeem our oath and carry out the revolutions of the last Reich conference, that we should be the best servants of the Revolutionary Party. Words are followed by deeds. The alarm is given by the leaders of the RFB. The armed rising is to take place at the end of February. Quote, our organisation, the whole of the working class fit for military service, is confronted by the decisive task, courage, boldness and determination. At any moment, all the leaders must be capable of mobilising the masses through the organisation. It is not only a question of calling upon the masses to passively defend the KPD and the rights of the workers, but we must also stir up the battle of the masses and direct a mass attack against the fascist dictatorship. The lead headquarters at the decisive moment expect every leader and comrade to do his utmost and to risk his life in the struggle for our class. We therefore order that 1. The whole organisation must be constantly ready for immediate action. 2. At any moment the party may be forbidden or other brutal measures adopted. 3. Nothing can or may hinder our work for a minute. 4. As long as we remain in permanent solidarity and are inseparably connected with the working masses, we are invincible. 5. Safest protection of operations and communications and the maintenance of contact are indispensable conditions. 6. All discussions and big meetings are forbidden. The chief command and the leader's orders are not to be questioned. Whoever disobeys them is a traitor. 7. Maintain continuous contact with the Reichsbanner, the formations and headquarters. There the atmosphere is favourable. Cooperation should be organised in this respect. 8. The National Front is not so united as they would have us believe. Large numbers are disappointed, others will become so. Therefore, propaganda among the masses must now be intensified with all possible energy. 9. Ruthless opposition against isolated acts of terrorism. The most decisive battle of the masses on the broadest front. 10. Organisation and defence of the working class quarters, watch patrols. 11. Ensure the safety of the apparatus of organisation. 12. Deputy leaders are to be appointed everywhere, mass distribution of materials and the sale of newspapers. 13. In this decisive hour, every leader and comrade must show whether he is ready to fight on fearlessly and to make the utmost sacrifice. Report on everything through the quickest channels. Leaders and comrades, unfurl the banner of our mass action. Forward to the most advanced outposts. Show that you are fighters and also, if the revolution demands it, that you can die as heroes in battle. Bound forever to all leaders and comrades, remembering our common pledge. Forward, long live our victory. From the League Headquarters. After the longed-for success of the Rising, the RFB was to receive its greatest reward. It was not to play the part of a Red Army in Germany, but account was to be taken of the fact that it consisted of picked men and it was destined to become a Cheka or GPU in the future Soviet Germany. The Red Mass self-defense organizations, the so-called Red Guard, on the other hand, and the Anti-Fascist Fighting League were to form the Red Army. Even in its uniform, the Anti-Fascist League gave an indication of its plans for the future. Its members wore black Russian blouses with dark red collar patches, black breeches and leggings, shoulder straps and sword belts, and dark blue yachting caps. On the collar, there was a red Soviet star made of metal. In spite of the important task it was to have in the future, the Anti-Fascist League was by no means so well organized and disguised as the RFB. Right up to the end, it was able to carry on openly and was not forbidden. In number one of its statutes, we read, quote, "The League is called the KGF. Its object is to bring together in one organization all anti-fascist forces to form a broad anti-fascist mass movement. It will train its members for the fight against fascism and will carry on this fight with the most suitable political and organizational means." Close quote. There is no doubt as to what means the KGF thought suitable. Quite naturally, there was only one suitable means of carrying on fight, and that was the armed rising. In the first months of 1932, the KGF hesitated between two purposes: to win a broad measure of support among the masses, and at the same time to create well-trained, closely organized fighting units. In its work among the masses, it even went so far as to form women's and girls' detachments, which appeared at anti-fascist congresses. There were, for instance, in Jena in September 1932, six squads, one youth squad and one of women and girls, consisting of from three to six groups of eight or nine members each. In addition to that, there was a cyclist squad. The purely military aspect was, on the other hand, most clearly shown by the custom of not carrying papers, but in identification discs on which the number of the group and of the man were stamped, and which they carried on a string around their necks. In the autumn of 1932, the transformation to illegality was begun, in the case of the Anti-Fascist League also, but propaganda among the masses was not abandoned. As late as December 1932, Das Sturmbanner, the official organ of the KGF, was writing, quote, "The revolutionary wave is rising. The masses are learning to widen the strike movement and to develop it to large-scale political strikes and even a general strike." Close quote. In close connection with the RFB and with the principles laid down by the Reich Conference in Brunswick, the KGF adopted a 3 months plan up to the end of February 1933, in the course of which 50,000 new members were to be enrolled and new squads and local groups organised. The similarity between the two plans of attack at the beginning of the year is very striking. This indicates, too, that the password had been given out from a common centre to be ready for the action by the end of February. The year 1933 brought to the front the necessity for reorganising the Anti-Fascist League in its illegal form, in strict accordance with what had been done in the RFB and in the illegal party organisation. The Group of Five was set up as the fundamental unit in the Anti-Fascist League as well. The directions as to organisation issued by the League at the beginning of January 1933 lay down the following principles. Together with the greatest possible decentralization of our forces, so as to extend our work among the masses, there must be, at the same time, the greatest concentration of the whole organization on the tasks to be fulfilled. At the end of January, they had got so far as to be prepared to let the Anti-Fascist League hide behind illegality. Agitation and propaganda were discontinued because street fighting was soon to begin. League headquarters issued orders to ensure the safety of the organization and to disguise it. I quote the order as it appears in the announcement of the Northwest District Headquarters of the League on the 23rd of January. 1. No member of the organization may give any information about it to an outsider. 2. Except at the meetings of the organization, members and officials, there must be no discussion of internal affairs, either in restaurants or in the streets or in railway carriages or tramcars or elsewhere. 3. Members of the organization are forbidden to put up or to give information, money, or any other assistance to persons who say that they are members, even if they produce a membership book. In connection with that, it may be pointed out that such people, often provided with every conceivable forged paper of identification, give as a reason for their wanting shelter and assistance that they have committed some offence and expect heavy punishment. This is always an absolute swindle, only calculated to exploit the feelings of some of the organisation members. Above all things, we warn members against such people. Whenever the organisation makes a public appearance, whether at meetings, demonstrations, or public social evenings, members must be specially on their guard against the activity of secret agents and agents provocateurs. Besides the houses of the chief functionaries, workers' restaurants and distribution centres of cooperatives must be guarded. After reading and discussing this document with the immediate leaders, it must at once be destroyed. Be ready for the attack. District Headquarters. Close quote. Safely protected on all sides, ready to take any action required, the Anti-Fascist League crossed the invisible frontier between peace from war. On the 1st of February 1933, it was at war with the German nation. At the same time, the formation of the Red Guard, the real Revolutionary Army, was also made ready for the attack. The KPD had already in the summer of 1932 begun to form these mass organisations, which were, so to speak, the revolutionary regiments of the line. It was the kernel of the anti-fascist action which had been called into life by the proclamation of the Central Committee of the KPD of the 25th of May 1932. The germs of such self-defence organisations were, of course, already in existence. There were, for instance, 1,290 members of the Anti-Fascist League and 183 self-defence men in Essen. 1,622 members of the Anti-Fascist League and 1,132 self-defence men in Duisburg, etc. And that comes from a circular of the local command of the Ruhr District Anti-Fascist League, dated 18th of May 1932. The spirit which animated these red mass self-defence organisations may be seen very clearly from the following remarks of the illegal central organ of the Anti-Fascist League, dated June 1932. Quote, litter, hatred and furious anger against the Hitler gangs. Those are the most important weapons of the working class. One must not allow them to be blunted by individual acts of terrorism. Infect the whole working class with your hatred and your anger. organise this mass self-defence, by means of the masses drive the brown pest from the streets and from all workers' quarters, then you will have laid the foundations for the final judgment on their criminal exploiters of the people, the reactionary barons and their swastika band of murderers." Close quote. The armed rising, the Bolshevik mass murder, was to be born of this senseless rage against fellow countrymen and of a blind hatred of the overwhelming majority of the German people. Mass terrorism and civil war had already been decided upon as the goal of the Red Mass self-defence. What had been proclaimed already in August 1932 by the central organ of the RFB, the Rote Front. Quote, "The mass terrorism of the working class and of the other exploited classes must be opposed by the terrorism of the fascist organisations. To organise a fighting front of millions is the only way, not only to treat the bourgeoisie in the separate skirmishes of the Civil War, but to destroy terrorism altogether, and at the same time to destroy the foundations on which the capitalist exploiters rest." Close quote. At the beginning of July 1932, the official rules as to the formation of the RMSS were issued by the party. Here we find stated that, quote, "The Red Self-Defence is a part of the great anti-fascist action of the millions of the United Militant Red Front. The Red Mass Self-Defence is neither an organisation nor a society, but a non-party union of all workers." Close quote. Groups or squads of the RMSS were, according to these rules, to be formed in every factory, in the dole offices, in every block of houses, and in the country. The task of the RMSS had already been set as to fight for the complete destruction of all strikebreaker and terrorist organisations of the Nazis in the factories and the labour exchanges. In August, after the Reichstag elections, the groups of five received the name Star. The street squads were called from now on Pennant and the town districts Banner. The squad leaders organised the service of couriers and had to see that more defensive sport practice took place. In accordance with the instructions of the RMSS, the house defence and factory divisions were given the following concrete tasks. Quote, "Active struggle against all Nazis by the organisation of mass action and the avoidance of individual terrorist acts. Concentration on the nearest Nazi base, the arrangement of barracks for the squads in reading rooms, party beer saloons, gardens, etc. The sounding of alarms by horn or whistle signals." Close quote. Three stages of alarm were laid down, according as to whether it was a matter of big national socialist action, of local disturbances, or finally of small incidents, which could be dealt with by the street squads themselves. These instructions state literally, quote, "At the first alarm stage A, the house squads move to their places, which they have to secure by sending forward, if possible, cyclists and motorcyclists to ensure against all eventualities. The necessary orders for action are issued after a short time. At the highest alarm stage, our comrades must provide themselves, as far as possible, with haversacks or rucksacks and the necessary food. The squad leader must also provide tools, axes, picks, spades, etc. All house squads must try to form independent cyclist groups." Close quote. By the end of September, there were in Berlin about 500 squads of the RMSS, with a varying membership up to almost 80. In Stuttgart, the number of squads was already about 50. The best organised were those in the seaboard provinces. Here, at the end of February 1932, there were about 13,000 anti-fascists in 200 squads. The Allotment Garden Owners Squad in Alon-Luttrup, numbering 220 men, represented a considerable force. almost two-thirds of the squad members were non-party. For example, sailors' divisions, 450 men, 60 of them KPD members, St Paul's South, 350 men, 95 of them KPD members, Central District, 1,125 men, 330 of them KPD members. At the beginning of February 1933, there were in Hamburg about 150 house squads with about 5,500 men. Of these, about 2,500 could be used for any purpose. As regards the technique of defence, the house squads had reached a high state of efficiency, particularly on account of the well-attended shooting evenings. The nearer the decisive hour approached, the more rigidly was the RMSS organised, until finally, as we saw, in the middle of January 1933, it was incorporated in the RFB on the understanding that the leading positions in the RMSS would be held by militarily trained RFB members. After that time, the organisation principle of the group of five was strictly applied. Three groups of five made up a section, and three sections a stormtroop. Representatives of the OSNA were attached to the stormtroop commands. The ranks of the reorganised RMSS were quickly organised, the order being issued that all male members of the party and affiliated organisations who were capable of military service should join up. In this way, an immediate concentration of the communist forces under the RFB was to be brought about. As a kind of reserve to this Red Guard, the ordinary mass self-defence, consisting of all the members of the party not fit for military service and the women, was called up. Every member of the two fighting organisations had to pay a weekly subscription of 5 pfennigs. The uniform for the reorganised RMSS was to be a black shirt with a black tie. On the 25th of January 1933, a march past of the RMSS groups of five took place in front of the Karl Liebknecht House on the Bullerplatz in Berlin. In Greater Berlin alone, the new military organisation of the KPD had attained a strength of nearly 13,000 members. The order was issued that all organisational measures should be concluded by the 23rd of February 1933, the anniversary celebrated by the Red Army of Soviet Russia. The German Young Communists League, the KJVD, had an important part to play in the preparations for the armed rising, since it brought together all the youthful and active forces in the movement. According to its programme, it was bound to undertake subversive activity in the army and navy and to carry on military espionage. Apart from that, it formed an important cadre within the Bolshevik Defence Force and was most carefully trained. We will take the following example from a police report from Nuremberg, dated October 1932. Quote, apart from questions of internal organisation and politics of the day, the regularly held group evenings and educational lectures dealt chiefly with military subjects, armed rising, civil war, sabotage, etc., in the field exercises, among other things. Action in the event of a police attack was especially practised. A new method is the holding of weekend courses in small towns and villages, at which the participants appear under the name of some apparently harmless society. Thus, a short time ago, the Young Communist League, having given itself the name of a National Science Society, held a meeting of about 30 participants under the leadership of the Young Communist leader, Andreas Paul of Nuremberg. The subject of the weekend course was the armed rising. The lectures were Joseph Bluth of Fürth and Martin Stichel of Nuremberg. Close quote. Apart from the previous mentioned mass organisations, the KPD formed, partly, as we have seen from its own members, numerous terrorist groups in order to be able to meet the requirements of an armed rising and of the technique of street fighting. the so-called Scheringen squads, became known at the beginning of February 1933. They consisted in Berlin of 100 men and in Hanover of 140 men each. There were even larger squads in Hamburg and Cologne. In these squads were brought together ex-members of the Red Youth Front and the RFB. It sometimes happened that the members of the Scheringer squads wore SA uniforms. Otherwise, the uniform consisted of a blue cap, a black Russian blouse, a soft black collar with a tie of the same colour, black breeches, shoes and leather leggings, sword belt and shoulder straps. On the left arm of the shirt, there was a round black cloth badge with the words Scheringer Squad in red and the squad number in Roman numerals. The particular task of the Scheringer squads was subversive activity within the SA and the SS. They were placed under the command of the RFB. As early as the beginning of 1932, a so-called Hammer Squad was founded in honour of the shot communist Hammer. Other terrorist groups were named in the same way. The terrorist groups were also used for guarding meetings. They held shooting practice. In particular, shooting at night was practiced in order to destroy the enemy in the dark. Countless little terrorist groups of from 6 to 8 men existed in all industrial towns, as for instance in Nuremberg, where the leaders were Jean Wolfart, Karl Rimmer, Richard Schumann and Franz Tansberger. The members of the terrorist groups were partly ex-convicts who had previously been sentenced, as for instance the above-mentioned Franz Tansberger and also Johann Michael Lunds, Jugendstrafe 155, Nuremberg. The latter had attempted to murder the police inspector on duty at a demonstration on the 11th of June 1932. He missed the inspector and killed a certain Faulkner. After the deed, Lunds succeeded in escaping to Russia, although he was already wanted by the police for a serious theft. A similar attempt to murder a mounted policeman was committed by Tansberger, who was later arrested for burglary. These attempts at murder were by no means the personal acts of the two criminals, but were an important part of the tasks of the terrorist groups, as has frequently been shown in high treason cases before the Supreme Court. The terrorist groups and groups of five form the fighting skeleton of the demonstrating proletariat. They are to use all possible forms of violence and crime in order to attain their terrorist ends. To this end, not only are outrages committed, but also robbing with violence and even village wells poisoned in order to get money for the KPD. The communist terrorist groups had also made preparations for wholesale poisoning. At the end of March 1933, about 8 pounds of sodium cyanide and 0.5 pound of copper sulphate were confiscated from a terrorist group in Dusseldorf. Half of this quantity would have been sufficient to poison the whole of Dusseldorf. The following were members of this terrorist group who were working in close contact with the anti-fascist fighting league: August Hilgraf, Heinrich Weitzeier, Hans Winke, Ernst Salvacher, and others. The parcel with the poison was first hidden in the rubbish heap of the house Bierenstrasse 1 and was then taken out again and put into another hiding place. Finally, it reached Hilgraf's dwelling, where it could thankfully be confiscated.